Happy Friday, Nashville. Next man up, 102.5. The Game, Jake Lyman and Parker Kelly getting you set for a huge weekend of football. College, NFL. We are broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Tons to get into today. We got a great football game last night. That's where we'll start. Lots of big games tomorrow. Titans playing the Texans on Sunday. Parker, did you watch that full game last night?
I did, and it was wonderful. I think I was one of the few that actually stayed through the entire game, because once it got to 20 to 6, a lot of people started to tune out.
Yeah.
And I stayed up for the whole thing.
So I was busy during the first half, so I didn't get to see much of the first half, but I did see all the tweets about Marvin Harrison Jr. being a bust, and so that's really all I gathered from the first half, and Sam Darnold, I guess, played pretty well. But I did tune in for most of the second half, and from a game that looked pretty boring to a heck of a finish, kickers basically decided the entire thing. Jason Myers missed the field goal that would have put the Seahawks up 10 with a little over 3 minutes left, and the Cardinals, who couldn't score all day, scored back-to-back touchdown drives, tie the game. But their kicker leaves the kick short on the kickoff, and they bring it out to the 40. I understand the new kickoff rules, and I do like that it's leading to more returns. But, man, in that moment, to come up half a yard short of the landing zone, and that basically gave the Seahawks, like, all they had to do was get 25 yards, and they were in field goal range. That's a tough way to lose a football game.
Who were those last two drives led by? The one and only Kyler Murray.
Nick Frazier's hairs on his arm just stood up.
Oh yeah,
hearing Kyler Murray.
Yeah, he was getting goosebumps last night. But no, it was a great game so far through 3-4 weeks of the NFL. It seems like it's the year of the kickers. Lots of kickers,
right.
60 yards. There wasn't a 60-yard kick last night, but 60 yards is becoming the new 55 plus.
And yeah. And yeah. I mean, Jason Myers, he missed the first one with 3 minutes left, and then the second one, it didn't look good off his foot. It was kind of wobbling, but it did go through, and the Seahawks won the game. I do question not going for two if you're the Cardinals there. Like, you needed one play to go win the game with, what, like 30 seconds left? I question not going for two. I understand hindsight's 20/20. The fact that you didn't get the game into overtime. Now, of course, everybody's going to be like, go for two. But in the moment, I was thinking, hey, you've got all the momentum. You've been rolling. Go for two. See if you can get 2 yards and win this football game. But obviously, Jonathan Gannon decided to go the other way. Seahawks kicked the game-winning field goal there. Do have to say, Marvin Harrison Jr., for all the flack he was catching on Twitter, and I mean, deservedly so. He has not lived up to the hype of the fourth overall pick, especially with what the wide receiver pick two picks after him has been doing. Malik Nabers has looked like the better player by far, but he did step up big when they needed him most late in that game. He caught the touchdown. He had a big catch on that final drive to set up the touchdown. So Marvin Harrison Jr., I get it. He was drafted basically to be the Larry Fitzgerald successor, even though like Larry had been gone for a while, but to be the next Larry Fitzgerald in Arizona, he hasn't lived up to that hype yet, but I'm not ready to completely give up on him. There's a reason he was as highly regarded as he was coming out of Ohio State.
No, and through those first three quarters, it was just rough, just drops left and right. That's been the story of his season so far, but it was on that first touchdown drive for the Arizona Cardinals in the fourth quarter that we saw the Marvin Harrison that we saw at Ohio State.
Right.
And that catch for the touchdown, it was phenomenal. The contested catch, strong hands, went up and got it out of the air. That's the old Marvin Harrison we're used to seeing.
The play that nobody's going to talk about, it kind of fell through the cracks. The fourth and four, somewhere in there on that last drive to go tie it. And Michael Wilson did not see the ball thrown his way. Like, he did not see it. He just kind of threw a hand up, knocked it down, and still caught it. Saved the game at the moment for the Cardinals. Game would have been over if they hadn't converted that fourth down. So I thought that was a great play. I thought he almost caught the pass a couple plays before down the sideline, but his elbow did land out of bounds. And as we know, an elbow equals 2 feet, whether it's in or out. So Michael Wilson with a great catch. Marvin Harrison Jr. made some plays down the stretch. Cardinals are the Titans' next opponent. They're coming off that loss. They're now 2-2. I don't think the Cardinals are any kind of world beaters. Like, I don't think the Titans have no chance heading in there. Titans are going to be an underdog in almost every game they play. But especially the Cardinals coming off 10 days rest. They don't have to leave Arizona. They played at home last night. They're playing at home next Sunday. That one just screams that it's not going to go well for the Titans coming up next week.
Yeah, I think with the Cardinals, and I said this about the Colts too, but I believe the Cardinals are a little bit worse than the Colts. I think there's a lot of fool's gold with the Cardinals right now. I think they're a fine team, but there's a lot of issues that they kind of have to work out earlier in the season. I still think they're better than the Titans, so it's going to be rough, especially when it's the second leg of your three straight road games. But, yeah, I don't know if I'm confident if I'm going to pick the Titans over the Cardinals just yet.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's a good matchup in terms of talent, in terms of rest, in terms of playing in Arizona. So we'll see. Titans coming up first. They've got the Texans on Sunday. We'll have plenty to get into with the Titans throughout the show. Did want to start with Derek Stingley. Has not practiced yet this week for the Houston Texans, and that could be a big break for the Titans. Calvin Ridley, there's been a lot of talk about him through the first couple of weeks, and deservedly so. He has not been good enough, especially after all the hype around the connection between him and Cam Ward. But if he catches a break and doesn't have Derek Stingley covering him all day on Sunday, it has to be this week that he finally has that breakout game. I'm not saying he has to have 150 yards and two touchdowns, but he's got to be the go-to guy for Cam Ward like we expected him to be this season. That's what we saw in the preseason. It's what we saw in training camp. He's got to start doing it in actual games.
If you're paid $92 million or whatever it is, you're expected to go out and be the wide receiver one, great for this team from the get-go, but especially if the Texans are without one of their top corner, one of the best corners in the league. If they're without him and you still don't capitalize, there's a lot more issues than meets the eye.
Right. Yeah, like we're seeing all the stuff TD put out yesterday, the stuff with the glasses. I guess they're like isolation glasses, so it makes it easier to focus on the ball. I don't know. Calvin needs to do whatever he can do to start to figure out why he's dropping the ball. That's issue number one. But it's not the main issue. Like, it's not like he's getting over top of the defense and dropping 70-yard touchdowns. He's still not getting open and making plays as much as they need him to be. Like, even if he catches all the balls that Cam Ward has thrown to him, he's still probably not being as productive as you'd hope he would be, given what you're paying him and given the pedigree of what you expected heading into the season. So this is a big game for him. I don't know what the rest of the Texans' depth looks like at cornerback, but like Derek Stingley is one of the best cornerbacks in the league. He's up there with Patrick Surtain. Now you're probably going to get, it looks like, Kamari Lassiter, who
he's pretty good.
He was an early round pick. Yeah, was it this year, last year that he came out?
Last year.
But outside of that, like Jalen Petrie is the nickelback, Tremont Smith. Like it's not going to be an elite cornerback following you around the field like it would be with Derek Stingley. So that's going to be a huge matchup. J.C. Latham also did not practice yesterday. Don't think we're going to see him for the third straight week, which disappointing, but I will say I would rather you be cautious with J.C. Latham because you need him for the rest of the year. Whenever he comes back, you can't have this flare up again and have him miss another month.
You need him just to ensure that Cam Ward's going to be on the field for all 17 games. He popped up on the injury report for the first time this week. I didn't put much stock into it. I thought it was just one of those precautionary measure type things. But you can't have Ali Udo out there the whole season. You can't have John Ajukwu. So you got to ensure that J.C. Latham is 100%. You don't want to rush him out there to make this issue worse and compound it.
Lots of storylines on Sunday between the Titans and Texans. Both teams 0-3. Titans heading to Houston, where they upset the Texans last year. No J.C. Latham, likely. Maybe no Derek Stingley on the other side for the Texans. Jarvis Brownlee Jr. no longer on the team. And a new play caller for the Titans. Lots of change this week for the Tennessee Titans. We have a texter, 2438, saying, even with Stingley out, the Texans have an elite DB in Kamari Lassiter. Lassiter is just as elite as Stingley, if not better. Feel like that's a stretch, and I'm looking back at previous texts. Think you're a Georgia fan, so that would check out.
Lassiter's good.
No,
but he's
very young. I look at the depth chart, and I'm like, all right, they got Stingley and Lassiter. That is a great 1-2 punch at corner, but like I'm sorry, Derek Stingley may have been the second best cornerback in football behind the defensive player of the year, Patrick Surtain, last year. So to say Lassiter is better than Stingley, that's a stretch at this moment. Eventually, maybe, but not right now. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you want to text or call, our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Plenty to get to on the Titans. We will come back and we will talk about the moves this week. The Titans have made some big moves, whether that's with the coaching, the roster. Did these moves change your long-term outlook on the Titans? Brian Callahan said this week, his response to the Jarvis Brownlee trade was, they made this move with short-term and long-term goals in mind. Did these moves this week change your long-term outlook for the team? We'll talk about it coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5. Next man up, 102.5, the game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Friday. Looking for a good spot to watch NFL games on Sunday? Then you should come to Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, home of the 29-degree beer, and join 102.5 the game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the Texans. Pregame show is brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Old National Bank, Circa Sportsbook Kentucky, and Tennessee Brew Works. Talking Titans ahead of the matchup with Houston on Sunday. Both teams trying to avoid an 0-4 start. Can the Titans get their first win since the last time they faced the Texans in Houston last November? Titans have made some big changes this week. First up, Tuesday, right around the time we were getting off the air, right around noon, Brian Callahan announced that he was giving up play calling and Bo Hartigree was going to be the play caller moving forward. Brian Callahan wanting to focus more on the overarching view of this team, being the CEO. He said that he's been in more defensive meetings, more special teams meetings. And then just a few hours later, the Titans trade Jarvis Brownlee to the New York Jets for a late-round pick swap. And my question is, does some of these moves maybe change your long-term outlook on the Titans? Because for me, I was, and we were talking with TD about this yesterday, about how the window for the Titans getting better has felt like it lines up with the new stadium. Right? Like 2027, this team wants to be playoff contenders. This year, they may not be very good. And nothing that happened this week changed my thoughts on how this team is going to be this year. They're going to be bad. But I thought next year there would be steeper improvement. And I think the moves the Titans have made this week show me that maybe they're further away from being good than I thought they were. And it can happen fast in the NFL. Everybody knows that if you get the quarterback and you can start to build the roster around him while he's on the rookie deal, it can get better quickly. But it seems like Callahan's on his way out. You're going to have to start over with a new coach next year. And I think that the giving up of play calling signals that. Like, this is a last-ditch effort trying to save his job. And then you trade away a talented young player who you hit on in the fifth round, and I know there's other stuff going on there because they wouldn't have given him up for that little if there wasn't, but you also just added another hole to this team that you felt like you weren't going to have to worry about. There's just so many holes on this team. You're going to have a new coach. I'm wondering if maybe this is a rebuild that you're looking at 2028, 2029 before this team is back in the playoffs instead of 2 years, which would be tough because if Cam Ward is the guy, by the time the roster might be good enough to match him, you're going to have to pay him an extension. So the window looks like it's going to have to take a little bit of a delay here based on what we've seen from this team so far this year.
You know me, I believe quarterback is the most important position in sports, and it looks like early returns that the Titans have that guy. And I was telling George Plaster this week that Cam Ward had to learn three different offenses in college. And if he has to learn a different offense, if Brian Callahan ends up being fired sooner rather than later, which we all think is going to happen, he's done that before. But then the caveat is this is the NFL, and this is not college football anymore. You may be able to get away with some things in college, but the NFL is a much different level, and we're seeing that with guys like Marvin Harrison, who we thought was going to be a bona fide superstar. Caleb Williams, what he capitalized on in college was out of structure, creating. When you get to the NFL, you have to learn how to play within the structure. So for Cam Ward, he's probably going to have to learn a new offense. How is that going to look?
Yes. And we don't know exactly what it's going to look like. Is Brian Callahan going to make it through the season? Maybe this is a move that at least buys him enough time to get through the season. I don't see a path for him to be the head coach coming up in 2026. Now, I did hear our good friend Adam from Portland called in to Robbie and Rex Road and said he thinks the Titans are going to win all three of these games on the road trip. I mean, if that happened, who knows where this goes?
Adam said that.
The biggest Callahan hater out there.
Oh, my gosh. That surprises me.
I believe his reasoning was, I want Callahan gone, so, of course, the Titans are going to do something that makes that not happen. So, I don't know how this is going to go with Callahan. Does he make it through the season? Is he let go at the end of the year? I think it's more than likely that he is probably not going to be on the sidelines for week one next year. But I just look at this roster, and I don't really know how you get the talent level to rise as fast as they need it to. I know they've got cap space, but let's look at the free agent class next year. Free agency in the NFL seems to be getting worse and worse. Like, nobody's letting their good players get out anymore, and it's like if you're getting some guys, it's marginal or they're older. Like, here's some of the most valuable free agents on the market coming up this year. Trey Hendrickson. I don't know if Trey Hendrickson fits your timeline. Like, he's going to be 31 by the time next year starts. And do you really want to pay for a guy who's probably only going to be around for a year or two? I don't think Mike Evans leaves the Buccaneers. I mean, he's expected to be a free agent. I really don't see him leaving the place he spent 12 years of his career. Christian Kirk, Khalil Mack, Debo Samuel, Travis Kelce is a free agent after this year. He's going to retire most likely. Like, there's not a whole lot of free agents out there that move the needle. Sure, maybe you could go get a veteran tight end if you want somebody to go alongside Gunnar Helm, and maybe that's Mark Andrews or David Njoku. But there's just nobody out there that I'm looking at on this free agent list that it's like, yeah, that's where your $126 million of cap space is going to go. And as of now, the Titans draft picks in 2026, they don't have a ton of high draft capital. It's not like they've traded away a whole bunch, but here's what they've got after the Jarvis Brownlee trade. You have a first, a second, a third, a fourth, 2 sixths, and a seventh. You don't have a fifth. So it's not like you're just rolling in draft capital either. That's why I wonder if maybe a fire sale is the only option here at the deadline. Again, there's been debate over what you could get for Jeffrey Simmons. I think there might be somebody desperate enough to send a first for Jeffrey, but maybe a two for Jeff Simmons. If you could get a four for Calvin Ridley, that starts to make your draft capital look better, and that's before maybe you trade down in the draft. I just think the only way this team is going to start to fill in these holes is what they've been telling us: draft, develop, retain. But right now, you don't really have a whole lot of premium draft capital to go out and make this team better in 1 year, because for the fourth straight year, you have too many holes to fill with the capital that you have available to you.
Which leads me back to the question, why was Jarvis Brownlee traded? He was a young player. He was a starter. Yes, he did struggle with penalties. Yes, he was very feisty, but that was just his style of game. And I know Denard Wilson was annoyed by it. And since Brian Callahan didn't give anything away at his media availability, we're just led to assume that there were maybe some off-the-field issues, maybe some locker room wasn't, I guess, just again, like I said, annoying Denard Wilson with all the penalties, and that's setting a bad example for the other players. But for Mike Bergonzi, early returns are he's hit on Chim Dike, he's hit on Gunnar Helm, hit on Elik Ayomehner, and of course hit on Cam Ward. So that at least gives some hope, some encouragement to the fans that he can continue to put together more good drafts. But again, like you said, the Titans need more of that capital. So if you're starting a fire sale, why in the world would you start with Jarvis Brownlee?
Yeah, because again, he was a young, controllable guy, and the Titans have done a nice job this week of keeping everything in-house. Nobody has said anything to make you think otherwise, but, you know, if it stinks, it's probably what you think it is, right? Like, when there's smoke, there's fire.
If it walks like a duck?
It's probably a duck, yeah. quacks like a duck. I don't know what went on there, and I don't know if we ever will, but it was a strange trade, and you didn't get much back for it. You didn't even net a pick. If you want to add draft capital, you're going to have to trade some of your veteran guys. And, you know, TD and I went through the exercise yesterday of who on this team currently do you think is going to be part of a winning team moving forward, whether that's 2027, 2028. We came up with seven guys, and honestly, I wasn't 100% convinced on three of them. Like, the only guys that I feel good about being on this team when they start winning again are Ward, Skoronski, Latham, Iamanner. Based on what we've seen on the field, I think those are the only guys that I'm like, yeah, if this team's going to be good in the next 3 years, those guys are going to be a part of it. Gunnar Helm, Femi Oladejo, Kevin Winston were the other guys that we looked at. But can you go turn a team around with just seven guys? No, you need at least like 15 of those guys that you feel like are key core players on your team and are going to elevate you back to the playoff conversation. And right now, you don't have the premium capital to go out and get eight guys this offseason. And again, this is kind of dumbing it down. Obviously, it's positional, and you have to find out guys who fit in your system. But you need to find more elite players because you do not have those guys that are going to elevate and make plays for you when you need it most. And I think the only way to add that draft capital is going to be to trade down. You're going to need some help with that. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have any thoughts, you can text or call. We'd love to hear from you. Adam in Portland texting in, the only reason you make that trade is the same reason you make the A.J. Brown trade, flexing on a young mad player. So instead of pulling him aside, you figure it's easier to let him know who's boss. No other explanation. It's different. Like, A.J. Brown
they're not the same caliber of player.
A.J. Brown was asking for $100 million. Like, and clearly, John Robinson didn't want to give it to him. It was a mistake, of course, but, like, whole different situation. We don't know what happened with Jarvis Brownlee, but if they're willing to give up on a guy who had three more or two and a half more cheap, controllable years on his contract and was a capable player for you, clearly there was something else going on. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. The Blue Raiders will take on Kennesaw State tomorrow at 5 p.m. Catch all of the action on Totally Hits 93.3 with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Friday morning. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. The Vanderbilt Commodores will take on Utah State tomorrow at First Bank Stadium. Pregame begins at 10 a.m. on 102.5 The Game with kickoff at 11:45. Vanderbilt football is brought to you by Gary Force Acura, Jimmy Kelly's Steakhouse, and Smoky Mountain Tops. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Friday, getting you set for a weekend full of football. We'll talk some college football later on in the show. Plenty of Titans. And our Monday headlines coming up at 11:30. I have not been very good at predicting what's going to happen over the weekend. We will see if I can get one right today. Before we get back into some big picture talk about the Titans, Jim Wyatt just announcing via release on the Titans website, the Titans have promoted tackle Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon to the team's 53-man roster on Friday. Reading this release, and again, this is just speculation, I think he's going to start at right tackle on Sunday.
You're probably right.
I mean,
I'm
reading the release, and it's kind of listing all of his accomplishments, and then at the end, Titans right tackle J.C. Latham hasn't played since week one because of a hip injury, and he hasn't yet practiced this week. Could be wrong. Could just be a depth addition, but I don't know why you wouldn't just elevate him if he wasn't going to play on Sunday. So Brandon Crenshaw-Dixon on the 53-man roster. We will see if he is the first one out starting at right tackle on Sunday, and maybe Brian Callahan will be able to shed some light on that when he speaks later today. We were talking about the long-term core for this team and how do they build up enough young, talented pieces to get back into playoff contention. And I went through the players that me and TD talked about yesterday of the seven that we think are probably part of the core. And we got a couple of questions about Sweat, Tavondre Sweat. And I want to remind people what Teron Davenport said yesterday is that he doesn't even know if Tavondre Sweat's going to be on the team next year. And again, this is all early, but that's what TD said on the air yesterday.
I must have tuned out during that part because my eyes just got really wide.
Yeah, no, and me too. I'll see if we can find the clip coming up later in the show. But that is what TD said, and he said it's injury stuff, and you know he had a good connection with Ran and some of the other guys in that front office. So Tavondre Sweat, I'm not 100% sure based on TD's comments. And again, I don't think TD has any inside information here. I think it's just speculation based on the way things have gone in year two. I don't know if we can be confident that he is going to be around the Titans when they get back to winning, hopefully sooner rather than later. In order to build this core, we saw it back in 2016 when the Titans traded out of the first overall pick. You've got to get a king's ransom. And that means a lot of losing has to happen, first of all. This team needs to be in position to trade out of a pick. And there has to be a quarterback there who is worthy of taking. And right now, those are both question marks. Maybe less of a question mark of whether the Titans are going to keep losing. I feel pretty good about that. But in order to get somebody to come up and give you the picks that you would need to start to accelerate this rebuild, there's got to be someone there worth taking. And it is so funny how much a month can change things. Because a month ago, the college football season hadn't started yet. And we literally had this conversation of if the Titans end up with a top five pick, they could be rolling in draft capital because there are so many quarterbacks that are worthy of taking in the top 10. And all of them have not gotten off to a good start this year.
Yeah, you could go out and get a defensive player and maybe a receiver. If you get two, if you can somehow get two picks in the first round, plenty of good receivers to take next year. Plenty of good edge rushers, defensive tackles, whatever. Plenty of good players. I'm definitely in favor of that.
Right, and I do think that I've seen the early mock drafts. And again, I hate to be talking about the draft in September. Said this with TD yesterday too, but The Titans are kind of mocked in the 3-4 range right now based on their record because there are a lot of 0-3 teams. And all of the mock drafts I've seen have them taking Reuben Bain out of Miami or Jordan Tyson, the wide receiver out of Arizona State.
Hey, Reuben Bain is the real deal.
He's the real deal. If you don't get a trade offer that's going to change the outlook of this team, change the trajectory of this rebuild, then run to the podium and take Reuben Bain based on what I've seen in the first 4 weeks because that dude is a beast on the edge.
I honestly think he's the best player in college football right now. Not even kidding.
Yeah, I mean, based on what we've seen so far, and again, it's only September, but he has risen up draft boards faster than anybody this year. And honestly, if you're not picking first overall based on the way the quarterbacks are playing, you may not get a chance to take Reuben Bain. It's early. Again, lots to do before the draft, which is 7 months away, and we are already talking about it. Mike in Lebanon.
I was
watching a video yesterday, and they were actually talking about the country Lebanon, and I mixed up my Tennessee pronunciation there.
All good. The same way with Lafayette and Lafayette.
Right. I'm getting used to these things.
Uh-huh.
I always thought it was Smyrna, too. Smyrna. Mike in Lebanon says, I'm already keeping my eye on tankathon.com. Honestly, it's not a bad idea. The Titans, 0-3, heading on a three-game road trip. This team could be right in contention for the number one overall pick again, which I heard Chase and Big Joe talking about yesterday. It's only happened 6 or 7 times in history. Last time was the Jaguars in 2020 and 2021 when they took Trevor Lawrence and Trayvon Walker. I think Reuben Bain helps you a lot, and it would be hopefully the elite edge rusher that you haven't had since what? Javon Kearse? Like, is that the last elite pass rusher from the edge that the Titans have had?
Sounds about right.
I mean, I'm obviously
I'm trying to rack my brain
like
right
now. They took Derek Morgan in the first round, but he was always kind of just a guy.
He was good,
really good player. Like, he got a second contract here, capable player on the edge, but not a guy that teams game plan around. You brought in Brian Arakpo, kind of the same thing. Harold Landry was a good pass rusher, but you could get the elite pass rusher. But, man, you'd love to trade back and just get a boatload of picks, just like you did in 2016, and you saw how fast that turned things around. Obviously, there were other moves in there. You bring in DeMarco Murray. You sign some free agents, but you also are able to draft Derrick Henry and Kevin Byard and Jack Conklin and Corey Davis the next year. And I know Corey Davis didn't live up to the hype, but Corey Davis was a competent receiver for you for his time here in Tennessee. He was a starting-level receiver. You were able to bring in all those guys that helped you make those playoff runs. I think the only way this team is able to turn things around and be a playoff contender in 2027, 2028 is if you can get those picks in a trade back. And so, Titans fans, start rooting on Saturdays. You know, I know everybody's got their college football teams. Start rooting for these quarterbacks to start proving that they can be NFL players. This weekend, look for Drew Aller and Dante Moore to just have a shootout in Happy Valley and light up the scoreboard in front of all those scouts. Root for Carson Beck in a couple of weeks to light up next week to light up Florida State. You need some of these quarterbacks to prove they can be top five capable, because if you have a top five pick, the best thing for this team is to just trade out of it and pick up a ton of picks now that you have the quarterback. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you want to text or call, we'd love to hear from you. Let's go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Gil from California is on the line. Gil, thanks for calling. What you got for us this morning?
Hey, how's it going, y'all? I just wanted to elaborate on what I think the I don't know. I mean, even if we do tank, do you guys have trust that this organization can get it right with the coach to go with the picks, to where we don't get rid of the coach and now it's not, we get another coach and it's not his pick? I just think everything starts from up top. And it comes to Amy, and I just feel that Amy, she's more like, I've seen her when she came to California a couple of times, and she's a lovely person. She's nice, but it's like, she's like a fan to me. Like, she's not involved with the team as much as I feel she should be, and they just tell her whatever, and then we get our up top is just all, like, disorganized. And that was the same thing that went on with the Lakers, and I would like to see her team up with another billionaire or somebody that's a football guru to get the right staff in, to where at least if without a cap, we can have the best football program, to where I know they can get things right. You have to think about it. We needed a left tackle. We got a right tackle. We get our coaches. They're not – we switching coaches, and I just don't think the up-top management and the decisions that they're making would even do us any justice if we did have the first pick.
Thanks for the call, Gil. I get what you're saying, but all of the – decisions the Titans make from here on out are going to be in the best interest of Cam Ward. And I think they believe they have the quarterback. And I trust Mike Borgonzi based on what we've seen so far from him. I think he is going to be able to pick players that can help improve this team. But you are right in that they have to go find a head coach. If it's not Brian Callahan, which I think most people would make the guess that it's not, you got to go out and get a guy who can develop Cam Ward and can be the leader of this team to get them back into playoff contention. And I know they're not sexy picks, but if you're looking at guys who are probably going to be the Titans head coach next year, look at Mike McCarthy, look at Matt Nagy. Like, I think those are two very possible, probable picks. Now, it could be Cliff Kingsbury. It could be somebody younger, but I think they're going to want somebody with experience. You know, the pendulum always swings back, and I think they're going to want someone with head coaching experience. Mike McCarthy and Matt Nagy, I think those are your most likely picks for the Titans if they decide to move on from Brian Callahan. And I don't think they'd be horrible picks.
No, I'm interested to see Mike Borgonzi, if he gets his pick at a head coach, because he didn't choose Brian Callahan.
Right.
If he gets his pick at a head coach, who would he pick? And honestly, this is just a little skeptical of me, but I'm nervous about if the Titans were to hire Cliff Kingsbury, because I watched how he coached at Texas Tech. I watched how he coached with the Arizona Cardinals. There's no doubt that he's one of those offensive gurus, but again, will he be the play caller? And if he's the play caller as a head coach, how has that worked out so far with Brian Callahan? I'm very skeptical of that.
Yep. Yep, it's going to be a very interesting offseason for the Titans if Brian Callahan makes it through the season. If not, We'll see what the Titans elect to do as they try and get this team back into contention. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you have thoughts, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's get into some of the big NFL games this weekend. Chiefs-Ravens coming up on Sunday. Both those teams 1-2. Winner gets to get back to 500. Loser falls into a hole early on in the season. Who needs that win more? We'll talk about that next. Tomorrow's college football game of the week is Oregon versus Penn State at 6:30 on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circus Sportsbook Kentucky. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game, Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly. Getting you set for an exciting weekend of football. Lots of big games tomorrow. Titans taking on the Texans on Sunday, but some more exciting games coming up Sunday as well. Chiefs and Ravens is one of them. AFC battle between two preseason Super Bowl contenders. They're still Super Bowl contenders, but they're 1-2. And one of those teams is going to be 1-3. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have kind of had Lamar Jackson's number during his career. But I have a feeling the Ravens are going to win this game. I think the Ravens, I don't know if the Ravens need it more, but I think the Ravens are going to win this game. That offense is explosive. The defense has had its struggles. I mean, you give up 40-plus to the Lions and the Bills. But I think this is a Ravens team that is just more talented than the Chiefs. And Mahomes, he steps it up in the playoffs when it matters most. But I think Mahomes is going to be 1-3, and that spells trouble in Kansas City.
Yeah, I was looking at this game too, and if you would have told me in the preseason that either the Chiefs or the Ravens would be 1-3 after week 4, I would have laughed in your face. This is crazy that this is going to be the outcome of the game, but I'm with you. I think the Chiefs, especially their receivers, their offensive line is not great. They just don't have they're having issues that they haven't had in previous years. Meanwhile, the Ravens, yeah, they've struggled too. They're 1-2 at this point, but I feel like they're the more complete roster. It is an Arrowhead, so that kind of makes you wonder, but I am leaning Ravens right now as well.
You look at this Chiefs schedule, if you ask the question who needs a win this weekend more, I think it's for sure Kansas City, because not only do you play Baltimore, let's say you lose that one, you're 1-3. So that's three losses. You still have to play the Lions, the Commanders, at Buffalo. You play Denver twice. You play LA again. Like, the losses could add up pretty quickly for this team. Again, I'm not doubting Patrick Mahomes. I think there's always... When you have him, you have a shot in every single game. But it's trending in a bad direction for the Chiefs. Whereas you look at the Ravens' schedule, and they still have a ton. That division's not very good. The Steelers are going to be fine, and I think they're going to end up in the Mike Tomlin sweet spot of 8-9 or 9-8. But the Bengals, without Joe Burrow, clearly aren't very good. We saw what they just did against the Vikings this past week. And the Browns, I mean, they're one of the worst teams in football, even though they beat the Packers this past weekend. So after the Chiefs, you look at what the Ravens have. The Texans are 0-3. Yeah, they play the Rams, but they've got the Bears, the Dolphins, the Browns, the Jets, the Bengals. Like, this is a Ravens team that I think is going to peak down the stretch because the schedule is going to ease up on them. They've gotten off to a really brutal start, having to face the Bills, the Lions, the Chiefs in the first 4 weeks. Now, the Chiefs have had a tough start, too, with the Chargers, the Eagles, and the Ravens. But it just looks like the Ravens, their schedule gets easier as the season goes along, and the Chiefs still have some really tough games coming up down the stretch.
Is it fair to say that the Chiefs have the Florida Gators schedule of the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, when you play a first-place schedule, it's never going to be easy, especially with the 17-game schedule, because not only do you have to play two first-place teams in the AFC, you have to add another first-place team in the NFC. And for the Chiefs, that is the Detroit Lions. So they have to play the Lions, whereas I think the Ravens get maybe the Rams or something like that, which, you know, the Rams are a very good team too. But the Chiefs' schedule, not very palatable as they move forward. And if they start 1-3, it may be a tough hole to dig out of. Not doubting Patrick Mahomes. I don't want to make it come off here as though I'm picking them to miss the playoffs, but I think it's going to be a tough climb for them to get back to win the division again, which is crazy to say considering how many years in a row they won the division? 10?
Yeah, every year since Mahomes has been there, and then a couple years with Alex Smith.
Right.
So
it's been basically a decade, if not a decade, since they lost the division. But if you're 1-3, the Chargers have already beaten you, and they're 3-0. They've got the Giants this week. So you could be in a three-game hole, and the Chargers are in the driver's seat for the tiebreaker. It may be tough to see the Chiefs winning that division. We have not seen Patrick Mahomes go on the road very often in the playoffs. And it's looking like if they're going to make a run and get back to the Super Bowl for a third straight year, they're going to need a third straight year. Is it more than that now? Fourth straight year.
Make it
back for a fourth straight year, right?
Yeah. For the Super Bowl?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Then they're going to have to go on the road for a couple of games if they're a wild card team. So it's a big game. Chiefs and Ravens in the AFC. The Bills have gotten off to a great start. They look like they might be running away with the AFC number one seed. Both these teams, I think, are going to be in the playoffs when it comes down to it. But we know how important seeding is in the playoffs. Of how many times do you have to go on the road? If you can get a bye, which the Bills, again, right now the 3-0 teams across the AFC are Buffalo, Indianapolis, and Los Angeles. Like, if I'm picking one of those teams, I'm picking the Buffalo Bills. So it's early, but this could be a big game with a whole lot of playoff implications down the stretch. If the Chiefs don't win this game, they're going to have to dig out of it. The Ravens, again, I just look at their schedule, and I know you never want to see your team start 1-3, but they have a lot of really winnable games down the stretch with that division that they're in, and I have no doubt that the Ravens are going to win that division.
Feel pretty good about my preseason Super Bowl pick of the Bills and the Eagles. The Bills look like the Bills and the Chargers, I would say, look like the best team overall in the AFC. Meanwhile, the NFC, the Eagles look like the Eagles. And then the Lions, I thought there would be a little bit of a drop-off, and especially after that first game,
right,
after losing both coordinators, 8 assistant coaches overall, and they got ran through by the Packers. But then since that point, they've been running through the two teams that they've played.
Right. They crushed the Bears and then won on the road on Monday Night Football against Baltimore. Their next two games are against Cleveland and Cincinnati before taking on Kansas City. So likely Lions going to be 4-1 heading into that game. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'd love to hear from you. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll keep looking across this week's NFL slate on the other side. A revenge game in Dallas coming up on Sunday night, Packers and Cowboys. And also, I want people's thoughts on these international games. Are you a fan of the early morning wake up and you've got, what, 15 straight hours of football? Or do you think it's a little much having to wake up early and watch these games at 8:30 in the morning or whatever it ends up being kickoff when they play in Ireland like this weekend, or England or Spain or all these different countries they're going to? 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Hour number one in the books. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game.